Welcome to Business Resolutions, a weekend discussion about business in Puerto Rico with Jorge Gonzalez, attorney and management consultant.
Good day, listeners. My guest today is Matoño, Manuel Mato Santos. Manuel is my brother-in-law and married to my sister, Maria Teresa, who's a principal at Tasis Dorado, and a business person of tremendous accomplishments. And what I want to cover during the course of this dialogue with you, Matoño, first of all, good day. How are you?
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Good, good. And what I want to cover is a little bit about your family and the history and how things have developed, you know, within this family business. And then some of the challenges that you have faced as CEO of Mato Santos Commercial, and where you see things going. So that overall, we'll do it during the course of this dialogue, those areas. And I wanted to start out with something might surprise you. I want to start with Ana Josefina, your daughter, and who has had tremendous accomplishments. And tell us about, you know, her position in California. She's head of budget and finance.
She's the director of finance for the state of California. She's currently serving under Governor Jerry Brown. But she started to held the same position for Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger.
And so she's worked with two different administrations, right?
Yes.
Republican and Democratic.
Yes, her career started as an intern in the Senate of the state of California for the Democrat senator. And after that, she was recruited by the governor, Arnold Schwarzenegger, to work in the Department of Health and Human Welfare of the state of California. And after that, when the governor started his initiative of universal health care, he asked her to lead that effort because of her previous experience in the legislature. That effort was successful in the House, but it was not passed in the Senate. And at that time, she was working in the office, and a previous colleague of her that worked in the Senate for the Republicans, Mike Janess, was then the director of finance and recruited her to be the director of the budget for positions she held for a year, just as the downturn of the California or the U.S. economy started. And then when Mike resigned, he recommended Ana for the position, even though everyone knew she was a Democrat. And the governor appointed her and confirmed her. And when Arnold Schwarzenegger was termed out, his successor, Jerry Brown, asked her to continue, and she, to this day, has the same position.
And she's what, 34 years old? How old is she?
She just turned 36.
36. And this is the top finance in terms of dealing with the budget.
She is responsible for directing the finances of the state of California, and obviously the principal economic advisor to the governor.
Tremendous. And the articles that have been published, at, you know, she studied at Stanford, the articles she's been published in Sacramento and in other magazines nationally have put her, in tremendous position as somebody who is able not only to grasp numbers and concepts, but to be able to negotiate, which is my area of love, across the aisle and have the respect of everyone. And in fact, say they come from the other side to tell them how they should present their position from the other side's point of view. So I want to congratulate you, and hopefully we'll have Ana as a guest to see some of her tricks in terms of negotiating in these difficult circumstances. But going back into your family or within your family, a biography was written on your father, Don Manolo Mato Santos, Un Siglo de Historia Viva. And I read it when you were so kind as to give me the book quite about 10 years or 12 years ago. I reread it, you know, for this dialogue, this interview, having you as a guest. And it is one fantastic book. Both your father and your mother, your father died, what, 99 years old?
He was 99, and my mother is now 101, going 101. To 102.
102. So in your father was born in 1900, I think in April of 1900, and so it's kind of easy in terms of, you know, things happening from a year point of view, that's how old he was. But I was laughing and so many interesting stories in the book, but one of the first ones in terms of conflict and people under stress, he arrives in Puerto Rico, I think in 1916 or so, he's about 16 years old, and he had a job. And like here he was, about $100 was it in his pocket? 100 pesos, but I don't know whether that was dollars.
He came in with $100 at that time.
Okay. And the book says, you know, that I like the thought of the image of him getting off the ship and walking Los Loquines, you know, he felt like it was like the ocean moving with a blue color. But the thing is, he makes the mistake. And this is not preventing conflict, but he makes a mistake of telling the people of the U.S. that he came and he had a job, and it was illegal for anyone under 18, I think, to have a job. So he got his future employer in problems, and he got in problem, and he was jailed for something like 7 days or 8 days. So his first experience arriving in Puerto Rico is to spend some 7 days in jail, and then the story goes on as he had to study there. The kids of that age had to study and they couldn't work, but he kind of cheated. He had to in order to make a living, and so that was kind of night of fun. But it's an interesting commencement, and you know, but what strikes me as I read all the book is how hard he worked in those days. I think he said he had 2 hours on Sunday, and all of that, just 12 hours, and they slept at the top of where they worked. And of course, knowing you, you inherited at that part, because I don't know of anybody that works harder than you. Did he, you know, when you think about him and working hard, did he just by osmosis got to you, or he really drove you in terms of being a hard worker like you are?
Well, I think we all learn by example to a certain extent, and I, you know, my recollections was that my father always worked very hard, so it was not hard to believe that when he came, he was a very hard worker, because that, you know, that's what he was. And I know that, you know, he came in 16 and he was not supposed to work until he was 18, so that would have been 1918. But he came with no returns. He knew he had to make it, and this was it for him.
And he worked hard until what year?
I would say he started, I started in 1970 in the business, and he was already 70 years old. I would think that when in 1975, 76, he started to let go. Mm-hmm. He was working very hard until that, you know, coming in every day, maybe some Sundays. And then
by not working hard, probably meant he only worked 8 hours a day for 6 days. Everything is relative in this life. Yeah.
That is correct.
I want the listeners to take this all is relative.
That is true. I mean, he did spend a lot of hours in the business, and you know, but he also liked very much what he did, like we do.
Mm-hmm. And he kept on even though he started allowing you to take over and to run the business, but he kept on coming in until he's 90, right?
He would be coming in till about when he was 95, he would come in. But even then, you know, he would call. He always wanted to know what was going on in the business, and we always, even till he was close to, you know, before he got his final sickness, we would consult with him, even though, you know, then he had no direct responsibility for the business. We always asked for his advice, because even though how he was brought up, he was a very, I thought he was a very progressive thinker.
Very progressive.
And would always, actually, you know, for the most part, I found that my brother and myself were more conservative business people than he was.
I was looking at one of the last chapters, and I was very much in a 936, and I, when I think of the, you know, the many things about him, easy person to love, but I always remember as the most striking matter was he'd always choose people. He always asked a lot of questions. It comes out of the book. He's always asking questions, and he'd choose the person that he thought would have that information and appreciate everybody. And with my case, I was like 936, and he would always come and start asking questions and question after question, and wanted to know, you know, how the things were going. And there's in the book a very prophetic paragraph in 96, where he makes a presentation to the board of Banco Popular, and that he thought the 936 matter was going to be lost, even though we should be trying much harder than we were trying. And he says that in his view, at least a third of our economy was going to be lost because of the loss of 936. I have to laugh. He told he always went to these board meetings, these stockholder meetings, and he suggested that management should freeze their salary and freeze their bonuses because of 936. It was happening. That didn't happen, but it's one of the four say. But I remember he was always very, very inquisitive and very, a lot of questions learned by a lot of questions, because he was self-made. I mean,
only that, but he was self-taught. He had I think he had a third grade education. He learned English. That one thing he did when he studied English at night when he came into Puerto Rico, so that he would know and be bilingual. And because he was all set up, he learned a lot through reading. He read quite a bit. And then by talking to people that he thought would know on the particular subjects of interest or that he wanted to know. He was always asking questions. That is forever.
And of course, you know, as he went throughout all the other different businesses, whether it was fertilizer, it was food at one time, it was just general products which he bought and then resold. It sounds like he just met just about everybody all around the island, and had friends all over at all the levels in the society. So. He was just outgoing and getting to know people. What would in terms of the major points in the development of Mato Santos Commercial, what would you say were the key moments in terms of its success and first of all his decision making in that regard?
Well, before he got into Mato Santos, he had a different business where he sold, you know, beans and rice and things like that. And then he sold that business to buy into what was then Oscar Bezosa. And Oscar Bezosa owned Oscar Bezosa Inc. And he had no succession. And he talked to my father about coming in as a partner with a potential then buying the entire business down the road, which happened over a period of years that he bought it. But so he was able to do, somehow he was able to to decide on which is the size of business that he ought to be in. He always said that change was always going to be there, and that you need to know how do you keep reinventing yourself and your company to go on, that if you stayed, always stayed, and only did what you were only doing before, mm-hmm. you would not be there in the future. And that, I think, that is something that he also taught to us, to be able to adapt to changes and reinvent our company, or change the nature or the course of the business according to what the opportunities that presented or seemed to be the future course of the business. And his entire life, he was always adapting. You know, he started as a sugar broker. He also had a lottery agency. He did, at that time, the reason he was a stockbroker was that there were no stockbrokers. Right. And he lived in Ponce, and he traveled through the island, and people would give him stock to sell along the way, right. of different the banks or whatever, and he would stop along and sell that. Just like he also had a lottery agency.
Whatever sold, he was ready to sell.
Yeah, he was able to. He was a good salesperson, and he did all that. And you know, unfortunately, in the Depression of 32, he lost all the money he had made up to that time. So he started at 32, 33 years old, he started from nothing again. So that, you know, he basically went to square one and got up and was successful again.
Okay, we got to take a break, and when I come back, I want to discuss then you and when you take over and what you have done, which is really exciting.